Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on the 21st of May.
Moving right along.
And it's going to be June.
It's going to then July.
Mm-hmm.
So
seems to happen every year. Same thing.
Yeah. You know, it's the same. You know, it's the same year into the summer. They say sell in May and go away. You know, you've heard that, right?
Yep.
Seems not to be. It's kind of upside down right now. It's buy. Every single time the markets go down, even just a little bit, for whatever reason. Like there was a big drawdown. For, I know this sounds silly, but. About 15 minutes today. I'm not kidding
Woo!
Either. It's like, whoa, and then you're like, that's your – there's always one a day. That's your sell-off for the day. But a lot of things are happening because we're seeing some, I think, fascinating news right now. Aside from what's going on in North Korea, nobody cares about that, Europe. I mean, just here in terms of the Congress grilling Tim Cook, fascinating. Yeah, you know, with implications that are very far-reaching. Have you been following that at all?
A little bit. I know about it, and I've seen a little bit of it. They're just essentially saying, hey, you know, if they're not doing anything illegal, what's the point?
Well, the point is that they're going to try to make it illegal because they're looking for revenue any way they can to plug the holes in the deficit in the country's debt. But here's what's interesting. So we found out that Apple doesn't really have a country of domicile for some of their offshore countries, companies. And they have excess of about $30 billion of revenue that comes into this one company that's a holding company that is somehow based in Ireland. There's only like a 2% tax there. And, you know, there's a big question of why doesn't Apple pay their quote-unquote fair share of taxes? You know, they make all this money and they only pay a portion of the taxes due on the income they make because they've been able to find loopholes that were in their favor by keeping money offshore. Now, this kind of, in a weird way, reminds me of the tax on mail goods. You know, when you in the old days, right? You know, if you could send something, if you're on vacation, you buy something in one state, you have it shipped to another, you don't have to pay tax on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole law about internet tax, you know, with Amazon.
Yeah.
And now you have it. Now they've expanded even further to the idea of the world. You make something somewhere, and even if you're make it somewhere else and sell it somewhere else, you could be liable for taxes in the U.S. if you're a U.S.-based company. So this discussion is really very far-reaching. And really, if anybody thinks that this discussion is about Apple, it isn't. As a matter of fact, I would bet that every major company out there that is doing this sent a team of lawyers gratis to Apple's side to help them prep for this thing.
Well, I would hope. I mean, the idea is obvious. The way I always see these things is that Apple appears to be state of the art for doing this. They're the best. They've got it down, so they're saving so much money, it's ridiculous. And so by grilling them and figuring out what they're up to, then you can take action afterwards, and it will affect all the companies.
Yeah, and so here's the far-reaching implications of this, as I see it at least. So you have a few potential outcomes. One is that nothing is done, right? Everything just stays status quo as it is, and then companies will find ways to maybe further reduce their taxes by moving money to other holding companies offshore. The second thing that happens is that the U.S. comes down and says, you know, hey, we'll meet you halfway. Maybe we'll give you a partial holiday, maybe for the first 25%, 50% of the money that you are bringing back. We won't tax you on, but you are required to be taxed from now on a worldwide income. Now, the implications of that would be something like, thanks. My company now will be domiciled in, you know, Taipei or, you know, in Ireland, which has always been very friendly to the tech companies.
Right. And they have a very low tax rate. Corporate tax rate's low.
So now what will happen is you have all of a sudden an exodus, and people are like, well, companies won't do that. What do you mean companies won't do that? Apple employs how many people outside the country?
I don't know. Lots.
Lots. And you know what? They could make everything out of the country and just sell it here. Why not? I mean, does Toyota have to pay U.S. taxes on the business, unless it's Toyota USA that's domiciled here. Yes, they may pay some duties and that kind of thing. Now, the other thing that could happen is that, you know, this is a protracted type of, you know, issue, which it will be. It will be, you know, all over the front page of every business journal and on CNN and all that. But, you know, you get into a situation where there are, you know, potential demands made that I just think that neither party wins at. The government's not going to win because they're going to be considered business unfriendly. And, you know, businesses will be a real problematic because they have to pay enormous amounts of taxes. So I think this is, at the end of the day, it seems to me, generally to be a lose-lose for the U.S. government. I don't really see where they come out ahead, because even if they come out ahead financially, it can be real detrimental to them in the future for innovation, companies wanting to do business here, even though we are the biggest economy.
Yeah, so far, at least for a while.
Right, until this comes down. Anyway, so very interesting situation happening, Apple being the poster child for this right now, and we'll see what happens. I wanted to get back to a story. Remember that story about that company, that Opco Health?
Yeah.
And I was like, I found out something. There was the reason why this guy is buying all these shares of this company, this guy Phil Frost, mm-hmm. who's honestly, he's probably 15 minutes from where I live, this guy.
Now, you should go say hi.
I should ask him a question personally about this, you know? Hey, Phil. And I know people actually that have bought the stock because they know this guy. So they tell them to buy it. Now, what's really fascinating, we said that he is the chairman of Teva Pharmaceuticals out of Israel. Teva owns a portion of this Opco Health, and that made a lot of sense to us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we thought maybe one day Teva would buy them. Well, here's the newest thing, okay?
Right. I think we made some fake investments in the on our spreadsheet regarding
now, here's
this.
Here's what happens. He's the number one insider buyer of a couple of pharmaceutical companies, and he's propping up the shares of two of his companies following an acquisition agreement that has been contested by some investors. Now, they're buying Prolor Biotech, and what's happening is they've been propping this up. Foster's the biggest shareholder in both Opco and in Prolor, has been buying Opco, agreed to buy buying Opco, and they agreed to buy Prolor. So this whole thing is coming down. Opco is now agreeing to buy Prolor. He's been buying both to prop the shares up, get the deal, you know, going and all that. Hmm. And then he's been buying Opco as well. And who knows if Teva's next. So I think this whole thing is our thesis is playing out very nicely.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
So he's buying still every day he buys.
Hmm. So
you take the next story. Go ahead. I dare you.
Apparently, people are crapping in public swimming pools. Did you ever know this?
This is
either they're washing their butts there. I'm not absolutely sure how this is getting in there, but
well, you know, let's be honest.
This is a big story for you. I know.
This is very big. This
human
big
feces
one.
Taint more than half of public swimming pools. A finding U.S. health officials are using to urge better personal hygiene. Yeah, wipe your butt before you jump in the pool. Maybe that would do it.
Now, this is even worse, that 72% of municipal pools have fecal matter in there.
Well, they typically, the way you determine this, the testing that you do is called a coliform test, where you take samples and you put them in these little vials, and then you put the vials into a little heater device. I forgot what they call it nowadays. I used to do this test. And then if you get positive or negative results, and if you get more than a couple, you have a problem. What it says to me is they're not using enough chlorine in these pools.
Yeah, I don't – exactly. Isn't that supposed to kill it? Isn't that the point?
Yes, that's why these pools stink. And when you go swimming in a public pool like that, you smell like a bottle of Clorox.
Right.
Yeah.
And the problem is it's self-perpetuating.
They're cheap. They're going on the cheap here, these locals.
Well, here's the problem. The problem is that you go into a pool and somehow you get E. coli.
Say that again, because you broke up for some reason. You're breaking up.
I was saying that you go into a pool. This is a self-perpetuating issue.
Yeah.
And you go into a pool and somehow you get this E. coli or some kind of gastrointestinal problem, right? Which gives you diarrhea, which then just
is. Don't go into the pool with diarrhea.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know. Let's move on. But I got to tell you something. Be careful out there. It's a jungle.
They said
sprinklers.
It says it's been increasing since 1978.
You would think that if you give them enough.
Again, I'm just saying, again, why aren't they just using more chlorine in these pools? I think this is all part of just a cheapening of everything.
But from 78, you think they'd have enough time.
Yes, to figure this out. Yeah.
So, you know, maybe if it's increased for the last few years, either add chlorine or some other kind of something.
Chlorine is fine.
Now, I'll tell you something. In Japan, you go into the bathhouses. You ever been to the bathhouses there?
No.
So you go into the bathhouses, and it's a sauna. It's a kind of a vacation thing that the Japanese people do in the summertime. It's hot as blazes there. You go up to by the Mount Fuji area, and you go into these bathhouses. And you go in, and the first thing you're required to do, they give you a bucket. They give you a washcloth, about a 6-inch by 6-inch washcloth, which most of the Japanese could use as like a wraparound. Okay, not us Americans. And you go in there, what they do is you sit on this little bucket. Think about a sand pail from a beach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you sit on this thing, and you wash thoroughly. Take the washcloth, the soap, you take it, and you wash your body absolutely thoroughly, okay? And there's all these people are kind of there, and they're all washing like crazy people. Then you all go into the community hot bath. There's a big old pool kind of thing, maybe 3 feet deep. And you sit in there and just, soak up the mineral spirits and waters and all that. And then afterwards you go and you do the whole washing thing again. It's much different than probably what most people do after the sweating after a ball game and all that and hop in the pools here.
Yeah, exactly.
We have no etiquette.
Just
here.
The opposite.
Yeah.
No, we don't care. No.
Same thing with cell phones. In Japan, if you're on a public transportation, you do not talk on your cell phone. Do you know that?
No, I don't know that. But that used to be the case here, too. And it used to be the case where people didn't use their cell phones in restaurants. And then one day, I think everyone just threw their hands up and said, screw it. We'll just use our cell phones all the time, and we're done. We're done. We're screwed.
Right. In Japan, there are signs with cell phones with the circle around it and a cross through it, like in public transportation areas. And it's extraordinarily rude to do that. Think about it. You're sitting on somewhere, and you got to hear somebody else's conversation. It's like a Larry David episode.
Yeah, totally.
We're just a rude population, especially when they start really yapping real loud right in front of you. Anyway, a lot of earnings coming out. Let me tell you what's been happening. We've seen some earnings, obviously, about close to 70%, 65, 70% of the S&P 500 has reported already through this earnings season. And the numbers are about 65% of companies have beat analyst estimates on earnings, EPS, and a much lower amount of companies, about maybe 50%, have beat on revenues. Now, in addition to that, a lot of companies have been issuing negative guidance on potential revenues. And it's very fascinating. We're at a stock market where it's at a high, and yet at the same time, there's a lot of earnings that are coming in that are, at best questionable. And we saw, for example, NTAP, Network Appliance, coming tonight. They guided down pretty well. The stock was up. Why? Because they also are issuing a higher dividend and a buyback program.
Old buyback program again, the one you love so much.
Mm-hmm. And we're seeing a lot of that. I mean, a tremendous amount of the flows on a weekly basis are from share buybacks by companies. There was another one. Who was the other one? Somebody did a $5 billion after hours today, and the stock was up a bit. There was a big company. Tip of my tongue, don't remember. But anyway, we do have this coming out. This should be very interesting. On Wednesday, some of these are after hours. We have Hewlett Packard. We'll see if they're straightening their ship a little bit here. We have Limited. We have PetSmart. We have Workday. This is a new company. It came out today.
Who was that? PetMart?
PetSmart, yeah. Well, it's PetSmart. I don't think PetSmart. It's one word, but it's not like the smart pets.
Yeah.
It's Pets Kmart, Mart. Lowe's, you're saying that Home Depot came out with their earnings today and they beat analyst expectations and they also guided higher moving forward. That stock has been look at that chart. It's been beautiful.
Mm.
We're also going to see Toll Brothers come out.
I think people are doing a lot of do-it-yourself stuff, and so these people will benefit.
Yep. Staples will be coming out. Staples is an interesting company. I mean, they're I think the number two, I think it's the number two online seller in the world.
Oh, really? I've never bought anything from them.
Yeah,
I know their stores are terrible. They're like, there's no help there. It's just they're kind of, they look like they should just, like the place has been abandoned.
Right. I don't, but I'm pretty sure if you look it up and you say, you know, ranking the top
online retailers,
I'm pretty sure Staples comes up like number two, which is hard to believe, but it is. Amazon clearly number one. And then we have Philips Van Heusen coming out, Dollar Tree, GameStop, which I want to talk about in a moment. We have The Gap. We have Ross Stores. A lot of retail. Sears coming out, Williams-Sonoma. We also have Salesforce coming out on Thursday, Aeropostale and Pandora, which just got a smack in the face by Google, who's coming out with their streaming music service.
Yeah, now, there may be a opportunity there because the Google stuff is – you know, Google doesn't necessarily do this kind of thing well.
They're definitely in the infancy stage. Actually, Pandora's not suffered at all from it. Really, there's everybody's coming to the rescue of Pandora saying it's great, it's wonderful, and, you know, it's still a beginning thing. But if they do take this on wholeheartedly, obviously it's going to be a problem for them. Today, there was a big announcement by Microsoft, the Microsoft Xbox One. Let's just get to the fact that they have a problem with naming.
Yeah, they, you know, there's a lot of, they were going to name it 7, or they, everyone thought they were going to name it 720. Then the rumor was it's going to be the Xbox Infinity, which I thought was a pretty good, you know, idea for a name anyway. And then they come up with this.
I'm sick of you. They're using numbers because numbers always sort of, I think, puts in the background that there's another one coming out. You know, there's a number two, a number three. I mean, I would rather be called like, yeah, like you said, the Xbox, you know, whatever you want to call
Infinity.
It. Yeah, okay, fine. That's good. And then, you know, version 2 or something like that. Anyway, they came out with this. There's a lot of enhancements. They're trying to make this the hub of your entertainment center, which is they've been trying to do for a while. It comes with a Kinect.
Yeah, by the way, they should come with a Kinect, but it seems to me that they have been, since the Xbox first arrived, they have been making, especially the 360, they have really gone out of their way to create a media center. They had special versions of Windows XP Media Edition.
Yep, I remember that, yeah.
All that stuff. And they just could never get any traction, even though what they were doing was quite interesting. And it was it could have gotten traction. I don't know what I don't know what their marketing people are thinking.
But here's something interesting. So, first of all, the new console comes 500 gigabytes of a hard drive or memory. 8 gigabyte.
Why would they start with that number? Why don't they just go to a terabyte and get it over with? It doesn't cost that much more.
I know. I thought the same thing. There's some other little things, but here's what's very fascinating about this, and it's causing a little bit of an uproar already. And I don't think they have the all the details ironed out, but here's what's happening. That they're going to a different process on gaming. So you have to install the game before you play it. Kind of like a regular program.
Yeah, well, that's what's wrong with that.
Okay, I'll tell you. And then what happens is it is assigned to you. You get some kind of maybe key code, let's call it, that is going to be matched to your Xbox Live account. So now you install it in your machine. That particular game, that particular CD or DVD or Blu-ray is now coded for your use.
Okay.
Are you with me?
Yeah.
You go to somebody's house. You want to play with your particular disc. You take it over there. You play. You have to be signed in on your Xbox account, Xbox Live account. Now, how in the world are you going to, one, rent a game from now on from a company like Online Blockbuster or whoever it is out there, or, for example, a company like Redbox, or what about GameStop that sells used games and, in fact, does also rentals? So now the problem is that if you want that game, you're going to have to pay a fee. And the fee from all the things I've been going through, because it's been back and forth, Microsoft is going to be a full price fee. So selling that to somebody else, them getting a new license key, is going to be like them getting a brand new program.
Hmm.
So what's the point then?
So you're thinking of shorting GameStop.
GameStop is already down 5% on the news. And I think that actually we could take a look at Coinstar, which hasn't been hit yet, which is the company that is owned by Redbox, or Redbox owns Coinstar. Mm. Coinstar owns Redbox. They're not as much, you know, as much into that, but Microsoft is probably going to do something where they're going to have, we'll call it a an online used game supermarket. So you post your game up there that you want, and possibly what happens is that you sell it to somebody else, and if you do it through this little platform thing, maybe it won't cost you full price. Maybe it cost you, I don't know, half price, and you know, sort of maybe Microsoft takes a cut off of that, and then you get the rest of it. And then you send it to the other person that's coded to their Xbox Live account.
Hmm.
So this does obliterate Xbox games on a used basis if it does go through like this. And again, I read a lot of different pieces tonight on this already, and there is a little bit of controversy, but it does seem like there is some traction with this. The this is what they said. When you buy an online Xbox One game, you'll get a unique code that you enter when you install that game. You'll have to connect to the internet in order to authorize that code, and the code can only be used once. Once you use it, the game will be linked to your Xbox Live account. And this is from Harrison over, I guess, at Microsoft. It sits on your hard drive, and you have permission to play that game as long as you have it. And then they go on to say, though, again, you know, there's a little confusion about how much the cost is going to be if you do sell to somebody else and you have to initiate that license key and then, you know, take yours away.
Hmm. Sounds kind of convoluted. Microsoft's not making enough money? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, I mean, in truth, can I sell you a Microsoft Office DVD? No. I mean, you could install it, and they let you do a couple different installs here and there. But generally speaking, you can't. I can't just resell that game that program can't be resold like 20 times, can it?
Generally, no. I think in Europe, though, they have some exceptions to that. I think the Europeans changed these rules, and I thought that was going to come over here, and never did. Yeah, well, that's one argument, I guess. Yeah, yep. Yeah, it's a game. But the game market has never been seen as a business market. There's a big difference between expensive business software and trendy games, but okay.
I understand, but I guess Microsoft is trying to lock that up and create more profitability for this, which I don't think the Xbox division has been profitable, has it?
I think they went into profitability about a year or two ago.
Okay. All right, so they're trying to get even more profit out of it now.
Well, now you know where you stand, and so what do you got to do to make more money?
Right.
You come up with these ideas.
Hmm. Right. Now, this also seems to me is this is a blow to Apple in a way, because Apple has been, it seems to be, behind the curve in some of these things, like the home entertainment. Yes, there's the Apple TV, which is really nothing more than a device that is, you can share video on a TV from your iPad or from your computer. You can actually use Hulu and Netflix and all that from it. But the difference here is that this actually will connect to your cable and create a very nice timeline, you know, a TV guide, if you will.
Yeah.
And you can program from there. And you can also use a Windows, programs. What do they call it? What's it called now? Something Glass.
You're mixing that with Google Glass.
No, it's something Glass.
I don't know any. No, don't know it.
Anyway, it's like the Surface. Anyway, it's called Glass. Basically, you'll be able to use your device to program and to, you know, check the different things, do recordings, do searches. And there's this thing called Snap now, where you say Xbox Snap Skype. And if you're watching TV, half the TV kind of folds in a little bit, and the other half comes up Skype, and you can talk that way. And there's going to be a whole big thing with NFL and how that's been going. There's all sorts of little things going on. It's going to be very interesting.
You know, the problem with all this, it seems to me, is that the TV watching public, and I think this has always been overlooked, is really watching TV, and they can't deal with all these complexities.
Yeah, the multitask.
I have a new receiver that takes the HDMI feeds in. I mean, it's just like, why are these things? If you got a lot of stuff, I have a Roku box, I got a WD Live, so I can take and watch Sling boxes on the big on the 100-inch screen, and which is actually quite nice. And then I got two or three other of these little set-top little boxes. The Roku 3 is a good example. And then I've got the DVD player recorder, and I've got a bunch of the. And so you have to hook all these things up through the various inputs, and then you got to get them out again so the DVD recorder can actually record something when you want it to. And I just don't see the general public, you know, warming up to this sort of thing. And this sounds like the most complex device that you could possibly own.
Well, the other problem is, you know, if I was to use it, the problem I would have is that when I watch TV, I wouldn't be using these things because usually I just nod off. You know, my TV time is my kind of relaxing time, white noise time, you know, and watch a couple of things, a few different shows here or there, and then boom, and give me a half hour. I never realized when I was younger how, like, my grandfather could just be sitting on the couch and just nod off. I totally get it. Very, very, very apparent now why that is. And how easy it is.
Yeah. Well, I've fallen asleep once. So I've fallen asleep in front of a crappy show once in a while. Wake up, you know, the show's over. And I go, what? And so then you go to bed.
Let me take you through a couple of other things that are really fascinating that's going on. Stevie Cohen, who is one of the best-known hedge fund managers out there, manages, let's call it round number, $20 billion, has an average return of about 30% per year. Major, major dude.
Nice.
This is the same, SAC Capital, and this is the same company that recently was under investigation scrutiny and paid the largest fine ever for insider trading, upwards of $600 million. Mm. Now, what is happening is that the investigators, as you see in enforcement, is going in and doing further review and investigation, and it's gotten to a point where they were cooperating, they were doing whatever. An announcement came out 2 days ago. They are no longer giving unconditional access to information.
Oh, okay. Good for them. You think he's going to end up going to jail like Martha Stewart was?
I don't know, but he is going to stop taking outside money. He's getting money back. Huge amounts of redemptions are coming in. And he's only going to manage. Now, $7 billion, here's the fascinating part. $7 billion is his money. 56-year-old guy, I think it is. Hmm. Now, if there was that much insider trading going on, is that how he got his returns all these years? This isn't a small guy. He's got a whole staff, major player. But he's basically going to fold up shop here. A lot of people looking for his asset holdings. You know, what does he hold? Because he's going to have to sell out of a lot of them, right? And that's going to kind of move some of these stocks.
Yeah, especially if he holds a lot of one or two. So he's going to dump the portfolio on the market thanks to the SEC coming in and nosing around?
Yeah, well, he's going to have to sell to meet redemption requests because a lot of people are doing redemption
requests. They're bailing out because they think it could be shut down anyway.
So here's the thing. Even though you have great returns all these years, there's some insider trading that goes on, which isn't good. You know, all these things that happen and people just bail on you, which I don't blame them, but it's the way it goes. I did run his portfolio, by the way. We have access to the Bloomberg to see the holdings as of the last update to the 13F file, 30T. So what I did find was that he has a big chunk of Amazon. He cut down his Apple. You know, he's got all the big names. I think his biggest position may be Amazon, Apple. But most of the stuff he has, you know, 2.5% of his portfolios in it, which is a lot of shares, right? But it's not like he's got a huge position in one stock that they're just going to try to beat down to force him out. So I don't know how much of an effect that's going to really have on the markets. I mean, he'll be able to get off these shares if he has to. I don't really think it's a big deal. But the bigger issue is that he is going to, you know, close his fund, and that's pretty significant. And that you know, shows, I think, some of the reasons why many of these hedge funds were so lucrative, the news-driven and the individual stock pickers, because they were able to, you know, find out what was going on when the rest of us couldn't.
Well, I mean, that's what you do if you're a researcher. You can dig around, find out stuff. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, it's not as though the CEO's calling them up and saying, hey, we got a really great earnings report coming out on Friday. Buy now.
If you're having drinks with somebody and they spill the beans a little bit about them buying a company on Monday, you know, that's not...
Yeah, it's an illegal trade, but...
Yeah. So that's some of the things that are going on with that. Now, I want to ask you a question, a little quiz. Time for a little pop quiz. You got a bell or something?
I do.
Yep. There we go. All right. Here's the question. What are the four best words to use if you want to scare the hell out of shorts, you know, people who are short of stock? Four best words.
Four best would be we're having a split.
That's a good one. That's possible. That's good.
That would scare a short.
I'll tell you what the I'll tell you. Yeah, that's as Richard Dawson. That's number three. I'm with you. Yeah, thank you. Looking for strategic alternatives.
Why does that scare a short?
Scared. When I see that word, I'm like, uh-oh. You know, if not if I'm short, but I mean, I'm saying generally speaking, you know what's going to happen right after that. Stock's going to shoot up. If a company is in trouble and, you know, there's a lot of downside move on it and there's some concern about it, they come out with a statement that says that they're looking for strategic alternatives, and they say they couple that with something like we have hired Goldman Sachs to look for strategic alternatives. That is code word for we want to be bought out.
Oh, okay. Sound like an M&A kind of code.
Yep. Strategic alternatives. Everybody look for that if you ever see it. Now, after the close today, Sachs, you know, Sachs Fifth Avenue, Sachs, announced just that. Stock was up like 25% after hours.
Wow.
Because in theory, you know, you're going to have a private equity or you're going to have some kind of player out there that's going to take a stake. And for whatever reason, now, I always wondered, stock isn't doing well, company isn't doing well, but yet, and the stock's at 10 and it's going to be bought out at 20? Well, how does that make sense? Isn't supposedly the stock price current reflective of what the stock is worth in theory, give or take a little?
Yeah, theory.
In theory. So the idea is that, you know, if a company goes private or if they're bought, it'll be more efficient. It will be, you know, something that somebody says, hey, you know what? We could take that company and cut the fat that you obviously can't do. Your management is not capable of doing it. Your team is not up to the level where it needs to be. And we'll be able to do this. And we're going to buy it for a significant premium. So stocks usually move up after that pretty significantly.
So what you want to do is have some stock that, you know, have a big piece, you know, you're running a company and your stock is doing crap. And you just make the statement. You buy in a lot, buy a bunch. You make the statement. Run it up and then sell it offshore.
Did you see what happened? That's what happened with Best Buy. The owner, remember he was trying to buy it? Remember he was trying to take a private consortium and buy it, and the stock went crazy up and then it's not going to work. Yep. Okay. Yeah, that's what happened. That's exactly what happened.
Well, it sounds like a good strategy to make a quick buck.
Of course. Of course. Strategic alternative. I'm looking for a strategic alternative.
Yeah, I bet you are.
Mm-hmm. 18, or maybe it's 19 now, 18 or 19 consecutive Tuesdays that the equity markets were up in the U.S. What the hell does that mean?
It means they know that the DHM plug's coming out.
Oh, could be.
Every Tuesday. People
getting ready.
Well, those guys, if they're going to do another podcast, let's buy.
Yeah. Well, they usually, sometimes it's called Turnaround Tuesday because a lot of Mondays were down. There was a whole string of Mondays that were down. You called it then Turnaround Tuesday. What I found, I was thinking about this, you know, with my spare time while watching TV. And I was thinking about, why on Tuesday? What is it about Tuesday? So,
well, let me think. There's a couple of things. There used to be, that's when Wimpy would pay you back for the hamburger.
Correct.
There's also Red's Tamale Day, if people remember that one.
What about Fat Tuesdays?
Fat Tuesday. It's also Patch Tuesday. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Okay, what did you come up with? Tuesday morning.
Well, I think it's possible, not definite, but possible, that there's a lighter schedule of economic data on Tuesdays. There was none today. None. So, in the U.S. at least. And I'm thinking that, if my memory serves me correctly, generally speaking, there's usually a little bit, I don't know why, Wednesday's always a little bit hot. It could be a lot on any particular Tuesday, but I don't know. I got to look back at that and see if there's any correlation to that. But I've been thinking that's a little bit, possibly a little bit lighter, and I don't know.
Could be.
Anyway, gold is tumbling again. Gold took just a shellacking again.
Yeah, it's down to 13 now, 1386.
Well, is that what it is now?
Yeah.
That means it's up. It's 1375.
Well, it was up about 270, but it's still, that to me is down because it was at 16 just recently.
Let's go look here. That's what you say it is now, huh? You saw it?
Natural gas is up.
Look at
Japan at $102.50.
Metal prices. Gold is at 1376.
It's at 1376?
Yep.
Not according to the one I'm looking at.
Well, I'm looking at, let's see, I'm looking at Bloomberg.
Oh, well, you'd be more accurate.
So okay, silver's so up a little bit. Down. Silver actually dropped. Listen to this. Sunday night, 6 o'clock, futures open. That's what happens. Futures open on Sunday night at 6 o'clock.
Yep.
Silver is down 9.5% on the opening button.
Hmm.
The yen is also moving up dramatically from about 103.75 to 102. You know, in other words, it's reversed, so it got stronger. So the theory was that as soon as it hit that 102 number, which it did, it binged a bunch of stops because a lot of playing going on, I told you, between selling the yen and buying something else.
Right.
Well, silver just got, shellacked. Now, what was fascinating about this was that gold was down to about, I think, 1350, I believe it was. It looked like, or 1342. I think it was 1342. And it looked like it was really going to get hammered here. The old low on that one spike down from a couple months ago was like 1322. Gold and silver make this unbelievable reversal midday.
Hmm.
And climb, and gold was up like, at one point, I think $25. So it was down like 30-something dollars. And I was up like almost $30. On the thought, because Moody's says, or there was at least talk about, that Moody's was possibly going to downgrade the U.S. debt due to some of these budget impasses and all that. What do you think about that?
Wow.
Stunning.
Yeah.
And also people say, you know, it was possibly double bottom, and possibly it was an area that was a very good support zone, and people started buying, and then the shorts were – now – one of the other things that happened, one of the things we talk about, and I've mentioned to you many times, is when you read in the papers, in Bloomberg, in some of the financial press, when they talk about the commitment of traders, which is a weekly number that comes out on Fridays about futures, all sorts of futures contracts, whether it's grain or metals or oil, that commodity traders, speculators, and large traders are the shortest they've been in months, or the longest, either way you want to look at it, where they have more contracts short this week on the closing than they have in 2 or 3 years.
Hmm.
What happens when all of a sudden the tide turns? That massive amount of short interest has to roll out and cover their positions, which is exactly what happened on Monday. Friday's news was that gold positions were the shortest they've been in like 2 years. They come in, they bang it down Sunday night when the market's open, the pits open Monday. It kind of settles out, comes down a little bit, and then the next thing you know, it rotates back up because all the shorts are getting covered on. You're getting squeezed.
Interesting.
Hmm? Especially silver that was down at like $20. It's at 22 again. Like a 10% turn.
Well, what do you think is going to happen?
Well,
silver still should be going down. Gold for sure.
Yeah, gold looks like the, you know, unless there's some more quantitative easing. Now, the next 2 days, there's some very big things happening. Tonight, late, there will be a response from the Bank of Japan after a couple-day meeting of what possibly they'll be doing for further stimulus. Now, one of the things that happened over the weekend was there was a high-up financial authority in Japan that said that he thinks that the yen has weakened. A lot of the excess has been taken out of it by the recent weakening, but much more weakening could be detrimental to Japanese citizens and Japanese investors because the yen is so low, you know, it's making everything else around the world so much more expensive for them.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I ran some numbers, and if you look at the price of oil, WTI crude or Brent, this year in terms of yen, it's up like 32%.
Hmm.
And almost every commodity is up dramatically, foods as well, in terms of yen. And that goes for other products as well. As a matter of fact, their exports and imports came out tonight. And their exports, which should be growing pretty well, right? Because the low yen?
You'd think, but I don't think these things like are same day.
This is going on for the 10th consecutive month that they have a record trade deficits. Their imports were lousy, and they were supposed to make the estimates were 5.5% growth year over year for their exports. They only came in at 3%, even with the reduced yen.
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah, well, I'd like to see some numbers on, okay, you reduce the yen, and now you go buy a Lexus car. Have the prices really been changed on the ticker? I don't think
not for us. That's the point. That's why they're making more money.
yeah, they're making more money, but they're not exporting more cars because it's still expensive.
Right, but the point is that in yen terms, they're getting a lot more yen for it.
Right.
So when you calculate the exports, it's in yen. It's not the number of cars, it's the yen.
Right. Oh.
So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay.
So the same number of exports should have a much greater amount. So in fact, only a 3% year-over-year gain in exports is pretty pathetic.
Well, there's a worldwide economic collapse as far as I'm concerned. Maybe that's what it is. I have no idea. It doesn't make sense, what you just said.
I understand, and I'm just reporting the news.
Anyway, well, we'll see what happens to him.
Yep. So that's going on with gold. Now, let's see. I want to talk about exports from China. Now, you and I have talked about so many times the questionable numbers, the questionable quote-unquote official numbers from China, right? You know, they tell you the GDP is this. They tell you the
exports.
Yeah,
they just make it up.
Make it up.
So somebody doesn't get killed or jailed.
Right. And because the individual cities, what we'll call it, or what they call prefectures, have a bonus is tied to how much they're producing.
Right. And so they definitely want to fake the numbers so they can get their bonus and get the new car.
They came out with exports that were great recently. But now there's been a study done that thinks that it may be tenfold inflated compared to what it really is.
I find that number to be a bit much. Tenfold, 10x. Mm-hmm. So if they say they exported $20 million or something, it was really only two.
Yeah. And here's why. Here's why. I'm not saying that number's exactly right, but I'll tell you what's happening. Because of constraints on bringing certain products, like financial products or money or gold, into the country, you know, there's certain amounts that are limitation because the currency is going up, so a lot of money pours into that, but they have to make sure that it's restrained. So what they do is they bring this in as a product or good, or they export it. So they're going back and forth to Hong Kong, or they're, you know, moving stuff back and forth, and they're writing it up as a good sale rather than a inflow of currency or financial product.
And kind of like a money laundering scheme.
Yeah, exactly. You're bringing it in. You're saying it's a product. You're saying you're bringing in whatever you're bringing in. You count that as an export or an import when it really isn't.
Hmm.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah, nasty.
I like it.
Very creative.
Anyway, so we see that happening. Now, I want to ask you about, because I'm not a user or a don't really understand too much, is Tumblr.
Tumblr,
you know it's got to be .com stuff when they're missing vowels.
Yes.
You know? So Yahoo buys Tumblr. At the same time, they do a major overhaul to Flickr.
Right.
Also to free space.
Yeah.
They buy Tumblr for $1.1 billion from this 26-year-old
kid.
Rich fellow. Yeah, good
rich
for him.
Now. Get, yeah.
And they say it's tech bubble pricing.
Yeah, a little bit. I think so.
What the heck does Yahoo get out of Tumblr? And can you explain Tumblr to me to a little bit?
Tumblr is just a website development system that is for quickie, very focused little blogs. It's kind of in between a WordPress.com and a Twitter and a Google Plus. It's its own thing. It's generally for people who want to do focused, small, kind of entertaining blogs.
Is it a social network?
No. He says, in fact, the guy, a kid, says, no, there's no social network. Just good content creation. It says it's all about content creation. I mean, they did a huge amount of money last year. I think their revenue or sales was about $14 million.
$14 million.
$14 million. I mean, and with no profits. So $1.1 billion makes nothing but sense.
Opportunity that awaits. So you create these blogs and these things. Now, how are they making their revenues? Is it off of ads?
I don't go there that much. It's probably, I'm guessing, ads, spot ads here and there, banners. I don't know. They're never going to make any money. I think this idea, I don't know what the problem is with Yahoo. This has been part of their corporate culture from the beginning, buying little companies like this, very little companies, spending way too much for them. I mean, if this was 10 times revenue, it would only be $140 million to buy it. Or if it was 10 times, you know, I mean, that's 10 times revenue.
Revenue. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So it's like they paid 100 times revenue, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, a little less than that, but it just doesn't make any sense. What they do get are these huge numbers of people because it has, like, I forget, some ridiculous number of visitors on a monthly basis.
But still,
and,
I mean.
I suppose Yahoo thinks they can monetize it, I guess. I hope.
Good luck. Yeah, I mean, the stock has been doing very well, Yahoo, obviously, under Melissa.
Right, I agree.
Marissa, I believe the name is.
Marissa.
Has been doing very well, and that's good to see. I mean, it was a stock that was, I think it was left for dead for a while there.
Yeah, well, it can go back in that direction eventually.
Oh, yeah, I guess it, yeah. But I'd like to see how this turns out and what they do with it. And obviously, the other question was, in terms of their Flickr, you know, the question was, you know, Dropbox, by the way, which I like a lot, is and there's a lot of competition to that. You have SkyDrive and you have the Google Docs thing and their box and all that. I mean, there's no reason that anybody can't have as much space in the cloud for free as they want.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking that too.
I mean, I have free 5 or 7 gigs on Dropbox. I haven't even touched my SkyDrive. I haven't touched my Google Drive.
I got the biggest kick out of the guy from Yahoo saying, well, 1 terabyte, which is what they're going to give away. No one will ever use that much. That would be a lot of photos. Well, I am approaching 1 terabyte in photos in my collection. I have a 1 terabyte drive, and it will probably fill up by the end of this year. I'll be beyond 1 terabyte in photos. So that's bull crap.
Yeah, it's almost like the old days of, hey, we have a double density disk. Who's going to need any more space than that?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know? You know, do we forget that possibly people want to do videos and all that?
And videos, I mean, really chew it up.
Yep, exactly. All right, so we have a big couple of days coming. I mentioned the Bank of Japan will be coming out with a comment, and the Fed will be coming out. Now, there was some, you know, the parade of Fed people today was astonishing because there's a concern in the markets that the Fed is going to start taking away the punch bowl. So there's, you know, the non-voting guys always say, hey, we want to really start, you know, thinking about slowing down the stimulus. And somehow the voting guys always say, you know what, we have to add more or keep it the same. And I think that's purposely orchestrated. But one of the guys said today that possibly we can go to negative interest rates. I'm thinking, how great would it be and how great would it be to stimulate the economy if you go to a bank for a loan for, let's say, $1 million house? Let's say that you put 10% down and you get the loan for the rest and they pay you 1%.
Yeah. Yeah.
To keep the house.
That would be great. It's a negative. It's actually possible.
How great would that be for the housing market?
It would give it a boost, it seems to me.
You could buy a car and we'll pay you 3% a year to get the car. I mean, it's ridiculous. So they're talking about negative interest rates. Now, the only negative interest rate, so that everybody understands here, that makes sense, at least from where I'm concerned, is that money that's that banks keep on deposit at the Fed and keep it there because of safety and all that, you know, is earning nothing. We know that. But if they actually go negative and they make the banks pay to keep the money there, what the banks will do in theory is then be forced to find alternative investments.
Right. That's absolutely correct. That's great. That's what they should do. That'd be a very good use.
Yeah. Because I don't see.
Because the banks aren't doing anything with this money. They're just.
Yeah, you know, on one hand, we hear that the economy is really doing better. It's moving along better. And clearly, we know the GDP numbers are not there. We clearly know that the manufacturing numbers are not there. We do see that the consumer's doing okay, you know, kind of consistently and staying and not dropping off too much. Consumer confidence came out last week at an 83 on Friday from a 77 from a 72.
Hmm.
So 72, 77, 83. People are giddy. And that gave a boost to the markets. And then you see that, on the other hand, the Fed guys are just all dour and miserable. I don't understand where that all plays out.
It's out of cycle. Something's wrong.
You know, they just want to keep on pumping it in. I think I told you it was 515 rate cuts around the world since 2008.
Well, let's wait for it to go negative.
I think that'd be fun.
So let's take a look at our stocks.
Yeah.
So wrapping up here. What do we got here?
Ooh. It's not there. Let's go over here. All right. So the stocks that we mentioned, there is a spreadsheet. A lot of you took advantage of my comment last week where I said that if you want to get a copy of this, we'll send you a link and we'll create it for you. I thought it'd be a lot easier than it was. We actually had to create spreadsheets for people.
Oh,
you know, because we didn't want to share this one. So we have to create the spreadsheet and then give it to them on their Google account and all that. But anyway, hopefully it works for you. We have the spreadsheet that is available. If you go to dhunplugged.com, you can just click on the weekly stock picks and it will take you here where it's a live updating spreadsheet of the things that we've talked about. The ones that are still active are listed and the ones that have recently been stopped out as well. And it tells you the gain and loss since we've mentioned it. And we have a 10% stop limitation on all these. But of course, there's not an offer to buy or sell any security, not a solicitation. And use good financial advice and someone who's an expert to review anything.
And
you know, please do not just take what we say as gospel.
Yeah.
Even though we are reverends of the stock market. Yeah, list it, man. He's still holding on to this Live Nation.
Yeah.
He keeps on edging up.
Yeah, it's amazing.
$10 is up 39%. Corning up 29%. Amazon, still holding on to that one, short 5% up. The Corn Fund, 13%. Since when is that? Let's look what that is. That seems like it was yesterday. January 30th.
Yeah, a lot of these things have been sitting here for a long time.
Yeah.
Live Nation's from last year.
Yeah.
We got your Murphy. Then I get a bunch of mine. I still got the two dogs in there, which is New Star and RCM, but they're not really killing me.
I heard that RCM is looking for a strategic alternative.
Up it goes. So you have BioCrist.
Yep, down.
It's out. You're out.
Yeah. I should have probably made a bigger stop because it has a.
It's kind of a. It's like a penny stock.
Yeah, so it moves around 4% a day with, you know, 2 cent move. JGBD is up 4.8%. Remember, that's the inverse of the Japanese 10-year bond.
Right.
So that's up a bit. Las Vegas Sands just keeps on floating up. Clean Energy Fuels actually broke out today.
Hmm.
It was actually had a secondary breakout today. And there is a – if it goes, if, there's a gigantic opening above here. It actually was 1405 was the secondary, and that's where this thing really opens up. And if there is a short squeeze on this, it could be dramatic. These are the natural gas fueling company. You know, they make the gas stations for natural gas.
Right.
Beyond my wildest expectations, oil keeps on moving higher. It moves down like 3%, then it comes right back at the end of the day. JP Morgan, by the way, up 8.5%, your pick there. The vote is in, and Jamie Dimon is going to be continuing to hold both the chairman and the CEO position that there was a big vote on trying to split him off. That happened today.
Yeah, I read that.
Let's see. Actually, why do we have Unitech twice here? What is up with that?
It's because it's such a great pick.
Yeah, let me.
You should erase one of them.
I'm going to delete this one right here. Actually, I'm going to delete this one here. Delete. Okay. My pick is a short on CoinStar.
Mm. You and your shorts. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. But I refuse to short this market.
Yeah, I don't. Well, my shorts aren't so bad. Some of them working pretty well.
I'm going to go with another insider deal. And you can look at the charts on this one. Yeah. Acadia Pharmaceuticals.
Oh, I think I know that one. What's the symbol?
ACAD.
I've seen this one before. Let's take a look at that. Why this didn't work. ACAD, enter. Okay, let's go to the charts. ACAD, enter. Down 2.5% today, $13. Let's take a look at the longer-term chart on this and what it does. Year-to-date stock is up. It's only up 196% this year.
Mm-hmm.
What's the matter with you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see what they have. They focus on small molecule drugs that address unmet medical needs in neurological and related central nervous system disorders. They have 4 product candidates in clinical development. They have a phase 3 for Parkinson's, something for chronic pain, something for glaucoma, which is good. That, I guess, goes against Allergan and what is the other stock? REGN. That's just some stock. Regeneron. REGN.
Yeah.
Let's see here. And I got some all sorts of other things. Where are they located? Let's see. August 5th. Okay. Net profit Oh boy, no money. 26 no, for no total money. Employees.
There's obviously there's a director okay, buying good. Up the others. Dropped $24 million into the stock, and I believe that there's something's going on with one of these tests they're doing. So it's what it is. I mean, this is the typical inside guy.
Yeah, part of the Parkinson's disease psychosis. Oh, that's right. Parkinson's disease psychosis.
Yeah, you don't need that.
I hope not.
No, that's my only one.
Okay, well, we'll put it on there as a long candidate. And my mouse disappeared. There it is. Cancel. Okay, so.
Do the disclaimer again because it didn't come through. I probably have to edit.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
You're breaking up every once in a while. All of a sudden, it's weird. It's not like that great connection we had when you were at the office.
This is not an offer to buy or sell any security. Please use professional.
It's funny when it starts to break up as soon as you give the disclaimer. Start again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's weird. It's like somebody's saying, "Oh, and they screw these guys over."
This is not an offer. Make sure this is not an offer to buy or sell any security. That you should use professional financial advice only, and don't pick anything that
that we pick. Without consulting somebody else besides us.
Yeah, exactly. So
and we aren't buying these things generally. I mean, you have some holdings in a couple. You got McGraw Hill.
A couple of them. Yep, and we maybe hit CoinStar tomorrow.
You might. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at mine. I'm going. I'm not going to buy any of this. I mean, Corning was probably a good idea. I should have bought some of that.
That was great. That was awesome. What's it called? The glass. Microsoft Glass. You don't know what that's called? I mean, just before we.
You're talking about that big giant Surface? The big one?
It's called.
Microsoft Glass.
It's called something.
Demonstrates glass interface.
Smart Glass is called.
Oh, Smart Glass. Spotlights. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's their AirPlay thing.
Oh, okay. I got it.
You know?
Yeah.
They have seizure warnings on there.
It says also, I don't like the thing, anything's got a seizure warning. Microsoft may launch Google Glass competitor in 2014. That's kind of funny.
Yeah. Apple Insider.
I watch these guys with these things on. I just say, you look like an idiot wearing one of these.
Especially because, what is it, Scoble? He works for Rackspace now.
He's been working for Rackspace for years.
Oh, really? Have you seen that stock lately?
No. How's it doing?
Horrible. RAX is a symbol. They just had another offering today as well, down 3.5% on the day.
Hold on a second.
Cloud, stuff in the stock that's bad. It looked good for a while. Down 48% year to date.
Ooh, that's not good. Well, there goes his stock options.
Yeah. Let's see where it is on a 1 year. 1 year, it's down 21. 5 year, it's up 279%. But it's definitely on a little bit of a slope down here.
Yeah, well, I never follow that stock or the company, so I should probably take a look.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll talk next week when we have a better connection, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
And everybody, please make sure to get us on your Twitter, The Real Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz are our handles, and we say things that just pearls of wisdom come out of our tweets, don't you think?
The Real Dvorak. Go check that out. And what are you again? I forgot. Horowitz.
Andrew Horowitz.
Andrew Horowitz.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
All right. I'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket stands a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.